I'm at UCL. I have I believe an attractive looking stand, although it has been mentioned by the person I'm stood with, slightly egotistical because my face is on my poster. I hadn't even thought of that. Story making walks and story making workshops, and yet the stories are all around me right now. I don't have to go anywhere. What shall I call you?
Call me Lee. Lee is my real name.
Brilliant, that's perfect. Lee, we've just been having a conversation and I was compelled to pull out the phone and say, I want to learn more about this. Now, how would you describe yourself outside of your... Well, you're a comedian for starters.
Yes, I do comedy for family audiences, yeah. So, bit of telly, more like Find Me in a Museum or something like Butlins, yeah.
And what's your focus when it comes to the content?
So it's popular science shows, the kind of stuff, if you're my age, you might remember someone like Johnny Bull in the 1970s on telly. So it's helping children and families feel good about science, and that's why we're both here today at the kind of Family Science Festival at UCL.
And I was just overhearing the conversation you were having with the ladies who are talking about the archiving of memories, the keeping of keepsakes, and you're a professional in this, really.
Well, I'm diagnosed, yes, I've got a condition, so I've got what's called hoarding disorder, which means I collect things and I keep things, often to my impairment, really. And so I was chatting with the ladies at the archival stand here, and we were talking about just what it means in practice to be a hoarder, yeah.
And what does it mean to be a hoarder? Because you kind of explained to me that although I might have a collection of collections, I've got lots of minifigures, I've got lots of records, I've started collecting tapes because it's cheaper than records, but there comes a point when I kind of stop and I move on to something else, yet I'm still enjoying the cassettes and enjoying the records. And you mentioned, well, when you stop enjoying or using, then there's an issue.
Yeah, probably the difference between being a collector or a serial collector like yourself, Chris, and a hoarder is hoarders tend to have three features, really. So one is compulsive acquisition, inability to say no. Two would be emotional difficulty in discarding. And then finally, a degree of disorganization. So keeping cat food in the bathroom, you know, toiletries in a sitting room. So a level of disorganization, whereas a collector is someone who appreciates their collection. They normally have it stored, referenced, and they care for it. So there'd be a lot less disorganization. So I'm pleased to say, Chris, I don't think you're a hoarder. You're just a slightly too keen collector.
I do take some comfort in that, especially from a professional. When I say professional, you don't do it for money, but you know a lot about it because you mentioned a particular, when somebody's a shopaholic, what are they?
Yeah, so one of the necessary criteria to be a hoarder is a compulsive acquisition. And we were discussing people we might know who are shopaholics. And I said, that's great, as long as you've still got the money to shop. Because what still happens when people don't have the money, say if they retire or become economically inactive, is that a need to acquire can continue. So people might end up hanging out at charity shops or attending family science fairs, picking up leaflets, or stealing, yeah, because there's a need to acquire, yeah.
So what's your main acquisition? Is it anything and everything? Can I use the word specialise?
Yes, and in fact, most hoarders have one or two themes. So a very, very common theme would be, probably the top four would be books, stationery, clothing, machinery. They're probably the top ones. So for me, I'm essentially a failed academic. So for me, it's books and paper. One of my friends has got a serious collection of dressing gowns, over 100 dressing gowns. But what he does, they're all in boxes and it's curated and he knows what they are. So it doesn't get in the way. So probably the key difference is someone enjoys a collection and it adds to their life, whereas a hoard can tend to detract. We're talking about people who I know who are never home because their home is unmanageable. So they don't sleep on a bed, they sleep in a sofa.
Because there's that much stuff. Does it become a health hazard in some cases?
In some ways, so there's one of the biggest issues is if you rent your home, then you're subject to stuff like gas safety checks, and if you don't let the gas man in to check your gas each year, you do run the risk of being evicted. Fire risk is not such a serious issue as you might imagine, although in parenthesis, the risk with paper and fire is that if there is a fire and they squirt water in, it's the weight of the sodden paper that causes the floor to collapse, and that does happen. But there are stories of people who are perhaps not caring for themselves, maybe fall and can't get out and die in a hoard. Yeah, does. In fact, that one of the classic texts on hoarding is called Buried in Treasure, and that's not about that, but it's about how people like me who are hoarders, we see value in everyday things that other people may not see value. So you can see our hoarders, we might have multiple collections. That's maybe a distinction, yeah. We'd have multiples.
Give me an example. A train ticket from a journey you once took in 1992. Where would the value be?
Okay. So it's a physical memory, isn't it? So it's about... Some people would have a very good memory, and anything can trigger that memory. So choose an example like that. It might be when I was 8, visit my grandmother, and she may live 3 miles down the road, but I've got that ticket. And to some extent, this represents a connection with someone who's gone. Or for many of us, many orders, it's an opportunity that's missed. So there is a pattern often of people who've hoarded making perhaps... lots of incompletions. I don't know if that's a real word. So starting off something and it not finishing. So the sense in which that train ticket might represent something. It speaks of something more than a train ticket. In the same way, yeah, I think a lot of people would have a collection of their children's clothes from childhood. That's not atypical, is it? The problem comes if you stored everything.
And that's the key that I'm hanging on to your every word, because I cannot fault... your logic in this. I have a can of Italian deodorant called Umomo, like man or something like that, from 1991, yeah, when I interrailed, yeah, and bought this, because when I spray it, I am, yeah, totally, because I can't archive that,
yeah,
digitally,
yeah,
I'm totally taken, yeah, back to those sweaty, yeah, train carriages where, yeah, I thought this masked, yeah, my stench.
But the difference between you, Chris, and someone with hoarding disorder is you can prioritise. So you wouldn't think, everything I've encountered. You know, people, for example, who save everything that comes into their home. You know, every empty can. You think, how generic can a can of baked beans be? But there are people who save everything. So there is a difficulty in prioritisation. It is a difficulty in categorisation. Like, what's important to someone who hoards could be almost anything. And there comes a point, that's why most hoarders... a diagnosis of hoarding disorder in our 50s. So we can tend to get away with it for a certain while. But what happens when it takes over your whole life, when you can't let anything new in? So that's the problem when it impairs functioning. So imagine, for example, if you can't use your sitting room because it's full of boxes of papers.
How have you managed to stay on top of things?
Yeah, so for me, the books and papers represented what I came up with in therapy. I referred to it as a wall of words, both physical and metaphorical. I was lucky. I had a sibling who, over years, repeated an offer of doing up my flat for me. She gave me a bit of money. I earned a bit of money. I got some people in, and I converted my hoard into a collection. So I repurposed my storeroom, took me a couple of weeks, and it's now a study. But that's because my hoard...
with space to move.
Yes, and it's manageable and it's purposeful. It's interesting, I didn't actually get rid of a vast amount of stuff, but I did reorganise it.
How did that feel when you did part with something?
So many people with hoarding have got an emotional attachment to almost everything. For me, that's not the case. For me, it does tend to be very defined category, books and papers, as I say. So some of that would be, okay, so you've got a conference program or somewhere you went 20 years ago. Okay, maybe you could save one piece of paper of that. It's interesting, I don't do digital, so I might have my badge, or I might have one piece of paper that is a prompt. So let me give you an example. Years ago, I stayed in a bed and breakfast. It was run by an ex-naval captain. And as you know, captain's quite an important role. And this guy travelled all over the world. And what he did, his mementos, he had a collection of matchboxes in a wicker basket in his hallway. So there's an example. He didn't need to save everything, but he had something from everywhere. So I was reminded of that, and I thought, okay, you don't need everything. You don't need every piece of school uniform, but you could have one or two items which are totemic, which are aid memoirs, really. So that's what I did. But that's partly because I saw that my hoard was limiting my life. So I've not let my sister visit my home for 20 years because I was ashamed and embarrassed. So lots of people with hoarding disorder lead very, a never home, always out. So I thought, I've got an offer of a new job coming up, life is getting better, so there's a reason to deal with it. What doesn't work, sorry for the rant, what doesn't work is what you might call forced interventions. The kind of someone turning out of a skip. It does happen. You know, you might have a sibling with a hoard, you pay for them to go on holiday, they come home and guess what, you've cleared out their home. It does happen and it doesn't work.
Wow, and but the way that I'm kind of connecting with what you're saying right now, that almost feels like an assault in a way.
Because we over-identify with our stuff.
Yes. And the fact you said over-identify is the difference between it being a valuable archive and what we've used the word again and again, a hoard, just this massive... the value... I can extract value from a bit of paper easier than I can a stone because I don't have the personal story because the words are right there in front of me.
Yeah.
And that limiting and knowing that, you've got memory cues which are enough for that moment without you needing to have everything from that trip.
That's interesting, the memory cue term, I'd not heard that before. Yes, that does make sense. And a number of people holding disorder would have this thing, they wouldn't want things out of sight for, get this, fear of forgetting. Yeah. So like you might have a pinboard, you might have some fridge magnets. There are people who'd need everything to be on show to a degree. Yeah.
So their attic may be empty.
Not quite, but...
That it would be important to... It'd be important and they don't literally lose sight of something, which is intriguing. So I've got a few friends who spend an awful lot of money on storage. You know, sheds, lockups, the bright colour companies on the high street you get. Yeah, and it's like their mission, really. Yeah.
So could you give advice to anybody that might want to get some assistance and help with their potential affliction?
Well, I'll mention one book. I'm not paid to advertise it. So the standard text is a CBT workbook. And a theme is Buried in Treasure. It's written by an American team of psychologists. And again, it's about people with hoarding disorder seeing treasure where other people may not share that. But one's hoard is terribly personal. They're like our children to a degree, which is not overstating it really. So that would be my book recommendation, Buried in Treasure.
And now give me a pub recommendation. A pub.
A pub recommendation. Thank you. It's called Nana's Bar, and it's in southeast London. I think it's Peckham or Deptford. It's a guy who, when his grandmother died, he didn't know what to do with her stuff. So he repurposed it into a pop-up bar, say Deptford or Peckham, Nana's Bar, not been there yet, but that's someone thinking, I'm going to take this stuff and memorialise a loved one. It's really interesting, it's a big overlap. It's kind of self-memorialisation, really. So that's what it is, Buried in Treasure, the book, or Nana's Bar as the bar.
Lee, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Cheers.